It was a little disappointing just to see some of the people just turn on you for what, you know, for feeling like I'm making a decision that's best for me and my family. And but it is what it is, you know. So I still have good relationships with people in Utah, and I still think it's a great place to raise a family.
Burdette for the lead. Yes! Burdette with the three. Bullseye! What a shot by Burdette!
He's got his J back, folks, and the eye of the tiger.
This is From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette.
Party on. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jimmer Fredette, and this is From the Logo. Great to have you back with us for our deep range conversations about life in and well beyond the world of sports. Jimmer, the leaves are changing colors. The air is just a little bit more crisp, and the fall sports, no doubt about it, are flourishing. And this podcast, my friend, is growing.
Yeah, it is. Thank you to all the listeners, to all the subscribers out there. Well over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube now. The numbers are going great. Social's going great. I hope you're enjoying it. We're having a blast. We love it. Best time of year, fall sports, leaves are changing. I'm going to New York again, to my hometown, upstate New York, this week with my family. We're going to have a blast. We're going to see all the colors. We're going to get Martha's ice cream. Shout out to Angelina's Pizza, the best spot in the world. And Dave Partnow, I'm trying to get you there so you can do a pizza review. But so we'll get to that a little later or something. But also, last episode, Bucket List Family, such a great job they did. Jess and Garrett, they're longtime friends. They have such an incredible story. If you haven't listened, make sure you go back and check it out.
As always, our purpose and why we do this is to uplift, educate, and entertain our listeners and viewers. We hope you're smiling along with us. We hope you all feel better after you hang out with us. And frankly, Jimmer, it's time that we put out the plug for all of our listeners and watchers to share their feedback, because it's time. It's time to give all of you a voice. We'd love to hear what you think about this show, what you love, what you don't love, and maybe what you want more of.
Absolutely. Please share your feedback. You know, we always try to pose a question as well that, you know, that gets you going. Obviously, the early trade, I want to hear about it. Lists that we do, lists that I do. We want to make sure that you're involved. We love your feedback. So make sure you drop a comment in the section. Go to our socials at JimmerFTL on Instagram, on Twitter, whatever it is. Make sure you're sending us all of your feedback. Anything that you have on your mind, send it to us. We usually respond. We like to interact with our fans and our subscribers. So please make sure that you're sending your feedback to us, because we love it.
Yes, it is always welcome. And hey, we're ready for the opening tip-off. And here is our loaded starting lineup today, led off by the greatest rivalry in college sports. Which showdown do all of you think deserves the top spot as best rivalry? Also in the rundown, the hardest lesson Jimmer ever learned as a pro. Very interested to hear how you're going to answer that question. Our featured guest is a guy who learned more than his fair share of difficult lessons and maintained an unbelievable perspective through it all. 14-year NBA veteran and NBA All-Star Gordon Hayward. Your guy, Jimmer. Just a couple of guys doing their thing in March Madness and back-to-back years into the NBA. He has an unbelievable story.
He does. Gordon is an awesome guy. Great family man. Just had his fifth kid, which we'll talk about. His wife, Robin, is awesome. Obviously, he played in Utah for a long time, so I got to meet him in the NBA and kind of get to know him a little bit in and outside of the court. And he's just a really good dude. He's got an interesting story. We'll talk about his time that he met. You know, they went to Italy and was able to meet the Pope this last summer. So he's got a lot of really fun stories that we talk about, and excited to get that start that story started.
That's quite the summer. Hey, how were things, man? How'd it go? Well, you know, went to Rome, met the Pope. Yeah. Ho hum. Well, I'm sorry. Seriously. What?
No big deal. No big deal. Shook his hand, walked around the Vatican, had a great time.
Yeah, unforgettable stuff. Our rapid fire NBA season preview also features some opinions from Gordon and Jimmer. Who's the favorite right now? Is it an OKC repeat? And who would the great Jimmer Fredette like to play for today if he had his pick of NBA teams? You ready to do this?
Let's go. Shoot your shot, as you say. Let's go.
Yes, Jim, we're ready to shoot in the early tray. And our first topic enters the chat from our subscriber comments. It comes in from at CCATL5478, who says, in reference to the premium tickets he would choose based on our multiple choice question last week, we threw out five different options. You can go to the World Series. You can go to an NBA season opener, maybe with a ring ceremony. You can go watch your favorite NFL team on Monday Night Football, NHL season opener, or your favorite college football rivalry game, all things that are happening in the fall. And our subscriber, CCATL5478, says, I agree with Jimmer. Give me Ohio State, Michigan. Our family lived in Columbus, Ohio, and football is king out there. That has a real case to be the greatest rivalry in college sports.
It absolutely does. It has a real great case. I think that it would be incredible to go to that game. That's why I picked it. You know, there's obviously some amazing other rivalries out there, the Red River Shootout, Oklahoma, Texas, Auburn, Alabama, BYU, Utah. Obviously, people that are in the West Coast know about that. UCLA, USC. You know, there's some great rivalries out there. But Spence, can I tell you what the best rivalry in all of college sports is?
You going on record with this?
I'm going on record with this. Can I tell you?
Yeah, please do.
It's Duke, North Carolina.
How did I know this was going to be basketball related?
I don't care if it's basketball related or not. It is Duke, North Carolina. Those people are nuts about that game, that specific game. They live and die if they beat one or the other. That's all they care about for the whole year. I don't think they care about any other game. They just literally care about that. And it's something about how good the programs have been. The players that have played at those schools, the high-end talent. Plus, you have guys like Christian Laettner, J.J. Redick, John Shire, and these guys that people really love to hate for some reason. Like, they just love to do it. So it's not just those people that enjoy that rivalry. It's the whole country. They're tuning into that game no matter what because most of them want to see Duke lose, and they want North Carolina to win. And Duke has obviously held their own in that rivalry, but and it's about the colors too. They're so close. They're like 30 minutes apart. The colors, the history, the players, the arenas, how great the arenas are, the coaches, how amazing. Like I can go on. That's the best rivalry in college sports. I'm just telling you. I don't think you need to prove me wrong.
It's on my bucket list to see Duke and Carolina play either in Chapel Hill or in Krzyzewskiville and do it at Cameron Indoor. It's an impossible ticket. I would love to experience that game in person. And I'm glad you brought up the proximity because I think that is an underrated facet in that rivalry for a lot of people who don't understand what North Carolina basketball in the state is all about. They're so close to each other. And frankly, that's what makes a rivalry like BYU and Utah even more special. It's 40 minutes between campuses. It's nothing. They're so close to each other, and that just feeds into the almost toxic nature, straight up toxic nature in some capacities, of what goes into a great rivalry. Taking nothing away from Michigan and Ohio State and the vitriol that those fan bases feel for each other and Auburn and Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, even USC, Notre Dame, Miami and Florida State. I know all of them are great. It's always interesting to try and compile that list. Like what gets number one? It feels like any of the six options I just brought up could be a correct answer, but because of the proximity facet and how many wildly, almost just, I can't believe that just happened. Moments have been displayed in the Duke Carolina rivalry over the years. You sign up and you're like, okay, we're going to see something unforgettable and absolutely bonkers tonight. And it's going to happen in this game. And that's, man, all of what makes it very, very special.
Yeah, it's a special rivalry. And you know, I know people out there, football's king. I get it. Right. They draw the most fans. They have the most viewerships. There's the most eyeballs around. People want to talk about it the most. I get it. So all those rivalries that you said, those football rivalries are legit. I get it. I understand. I would love to go to all of them. They're incredible. There's nothing to take away, but Duke, North Carolina, there's just something about it. As a basketball junkie, there is just something about that game that I just can't get over. Just can't do it.
For me, it's 1A and 1B. It's Ohio State, Michigan, and it's Duke, Carolina. You choose. Like it. I cannot pick one. Like for me, it truly is a 1A, 1B scenario. It's destination viewing for me on the Ohio State, Michigan football side and the Duke, Carolina basketball side. So they kind of own, they have their own kingdoms and their own relative sports. But man, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready looking. Like we don't have to wait that long. Like we're going to watch Ohio State, Michigan in probably 5 or 6 weeks. And then Duke, Carolina's essentially right around the corner in a few months.
We got to do a live pod at one of those events at some point. Just, I don't even care. We don't have to be in the arena. They can kick us out eventually, but just like start it somewhere around there. I just want to be around it.
Okay. You chime in. We're inviting all of you to tell us what the greatest college sports rivalry is. Maybe you think Jimmer and I are out of our minds and we're not giving enough credibility to Alabama, Auburn, or Oklahoma, Texas, or something else. Even BYU, Utah fans are like, hey, we're super underrated. You don't understand. Hey, Jimmer understands. You played in it. Okay, that's topic number one. On to topic number two. And this is a tough question and may take you to a difficult place, Jimmer, but it's something that's been in our list. And I know that our viewers and our listeners are very interested in hearing your answer to this because you've experienced so much. And one of the things that I love most about you is just your ability to adapt to a very hard situation, figure it out, and try and make the most of it. When it's downright, it sucks sometimes. It's just difficult. So with that backdrop, what's the hardest lesson you ever learned as a pro?
Basketball isn't everything. Family, faith, treating people the right way, kindness, all of these things are my plan A now instead of basketball. So because of that, my life started to change. I started to become better. My situation started to become more happy. I was finding more joy in my life through my family and all these things. And it was all because the focus of my life changed. And I think that was the hardest lesson for me to learn and the hardest to go through. But then afterwards, once I was able to figure that out through my career, I was a much more happy person to be around. And you can talk to Whitney about that. We talked about that a little bit with Gordon, all the vent sessions that we have with our wives during these seasons. And it's just because it was your everything. And then once you change that mindset, things become a lot easier, whether you're doing well or whether you're not doing well. Because basketball is going to come and go, but your family, your faith, all of those things are going to stay the rest of your life. So how are you living your life and how are you portraying yourself? And I think that's was the most important thing for me and the hardest lesson I had to learn.
Wow. Real talk from Jimmer. And again, a lot of that is just, it just stinks because, and I'm going to cite some specific things here. The GM and the coach that drafted you with the Sacramento Kings, they like your style, Jimmer. They knew what you were. They wanted you on that roster. And then you can walk us through the specific timeline, but it was a number of weeks, maybe a little more than a month before there's complete upheaval, not to mention the strike or the lockout that was going on.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even be in the team facility. It just was a crazy scenario. And then all of a sudden, the coach that wanted you and the management, at least some of the people on SF that wanted you, were not there anymore. And now you're looking into the eyes of a coach who's like, meh, I wouldn't have drafted you or whatever. So how did you handle that? Because it was completely out of your control.
Yeah, no, the situation changed quickly. And it was less than a month. It was 2 weeks. And my coach got changed. It was literally like 5 or 6 games. And then the coach changed. And that's the crazy part about the NBA is you never know what's going to happen with your situation. Because the coach can get fired. You can get traded. They can buy you out. All of a sudden a new GM could come in. I mean, we almost got sold and moved from Sacramento to Seattle. Like Whitney and I were looking at houses in Seattle because we thought we were leaving. They had basically told us we were going to, and then miraculously Sacramento kept it there. So we were that close to going to Seattle. Everything was just kind of in flux at that time. And then we also had a really young team. And that was another thing. We didn't have a whole lot of veteran leadership. It was a bunch of young guys that were trying to get their own. That was it, because they were like, I want to get to the next spot. Like, I'm not necessarily thinking that I'm going to create a career here in Sacramento. Everyone is trying to get out. So because of that, they were all just playing. Everyone was kind of playing for themselves. So it was just that situation. And then on top of it, not having this coaching change and not playing at all, like the coach changed the next three games. I didn't play even a second. I started to question myself, like, man, am I good enough? Like, what did I do wrong? How do I do this? And at that point, like I said, you have to pull from your faith. And that's what I had to do. I also really got into a routine as well. I think that's something that was important for me, getting to practice early, being able to shoot with, the managers that were there. I'd get to the facility an hour and a half or 2 hours before the practice would start, and I'd get my shots up and everything before everyone got into the gym, so that I at least felt good, so that I knew if I got into the game, I think I could at least somewhat perform to the best of my ability, or if it wasn't at that spot, I would keep my routine so that I was prepared for the next spot. So having that faith to make sure that I could pull from it, and then also having a routine every single day that helped keep me mentally and physically in shape, so that when I got my opportunity, wherever that was at, I was able to perform. So I think those were the biggest things to be able to do during that situation.
Okay. We're going to get to our third item in this early tray, and it has been, it's been loaded. Man, so many good tidbits in here. But this is our rapid fire NBA season preview with you. We're going to do the same thing with Gordon Hayward in just a few minutes. I just asked you which teams in the NBA would have fit your game the best back in 2011 when you were drafted. What about right now? Because everybody, as you just said, is shooting the three, and it's volume shooting from three. So who's your team of choice if you could take prime Jimmer right out of college and put that guy on an NBA roster right now?
Yeah. Two teams come to mind. Golden State, obviously, would be a great fit. Another one are the Pacers. They play super fast. They shoot threes. Guys that can get you open. They like to play multiple guards on all of those teams. They like to have multiple shooters out in the court at all times, multiple ball handlers. So I think those two teams for me currently would be really, really good.
Okay, next rapid fire question. Who's your favorite to win the NBA Finals in the summer of 2026?
Ah, man, it's a tough question. It's hard to go against the Oklahoma City Thunder, obviously. That young core is incredible. But I don't know. I love what the Nuggets did in the offseason. I just love what the Nuggets did. Obviously, I'm a homer. I live in Denver now. But with Jokic playing at the level that he's playing at, I see that happening again. And then all the pickups that they just got.
Yes.
With Cam Johnson and Bruce Brown. And Valanciunas is a huge pickup for them. They could rest Jokic for like 5 to 8 minutes a game and play through Valanciunas, and he can get you buckets and be able to score and kind of defend the rim. So like, have that on the team as well as all the other pickups, and do it for fairly cheap and keep all of their other guys. They almost beat OKC last year. It was in seven games, right? So they're a tough matchup for OKC because Jokic is so good. I like the Nuggets. I'm going to go with my pick being the Nuggets. Going a little
Rocky
different.
Rocky Mountain High for Jimmer. Full clarity, we did not have any type of conversation about this before the podcast recording. I want your unfiltered answers. We don't talk about it on purpose, but my pick is the Denver Nuggets. I thought you were going to say OKC. I thought you were going to say OKC to repeat.
Well, because most people are, right? I mean, it's hard to go against them. They're so talented. They're young. They're in a good part in their career right now. All those guys, right? Jalen and Chet and Shea. And then they got guys like Wallace and Caruso that they can just throw at each other, and they're all coming back. So Lou Dort. And so it's hard to go against that team, obviously, and they just did it. But like I said, Denver is a tough matchup for them. They are. And it's just because Jokic is so good, and then they put shooting around them. that it's going to be interesting if they match up again to see what happens. Obviously, Houston, they could be extremely good. They lost Van Vliet, so we'll see what happens there. But they're a dark horse, too, because that team is extremely talented as well. And they got Kevin Durant now. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, we didn't talk about this. I think the Nuggets are going to do it.
Listen, when Jamal Murray is not your first option on the team, you have something special.
You're great, obviously. And I mean, Jokic is phenomenal. We'll talk about this in a second, but he's phenomenal.
Whew. Okay. Yeah, that leads us into our next question. Best player in the NBA right now. If it's not Nikola Jokic, who is it?
It is Nikola Jokic. Like, there's no other answer. Shai, he won the MVP last year. He's incredible. I love Shai. Love his game. His surrounding cast, I think, is better than the Nuggets surrounding cast. But he had an unbelievable guard season last year. But Jokic, his efficiency last year was off the charts. It was the best efficiency for an offensive player almost ever. And that's counting Wilt Chamberlain and all these guys. Like, the way that he has been able to play the game of basketball and make it so simple and make it so that it is so easy for him to do, it's unbelievable. I've never seen a player like him that is that big and that tall, that has that type of touch and then that type of passing ability. I know there's some guys back in the day that people talk about with Sabonis and some of these things, but he's a unicorn. He's one of a kind, and I think he's the best player in the NBA.
The final question, the most underrated NBA team in the 2025-2026 campaign. I'm very interested to hear your answer because I feel strongly about my choice.
Man, this is a great question. There's a lot of underrated teams. There's a couple that come to mind to me. In the East, I think the Hawks are going to be pretty good.
Okay.
I do. Yeah. I think the Atlanta Hawks are going to become pretty good. They got Jalen Johnson back. They were pretty good last year. Dyson Daniels is great. Okay. They have some bigs. I think they're going to be sneaky good in the East because the East is down a little this year. So I think they're going to vie for a spot in that Eastern Conference. So I really, really like the Hawks. And I still think the Timberwolves are really good. Like, I think that the Anthony Edwards seems like he's coming back a different person. Like, I don't know if you've seen his quotes recently, but he's like, I'm not trying to pass this year. I'm trying to score every time I touch the ball. And that type of mentality for other teams scares me because if he has that type of mentality, he can score. But he'll also make the right play if he's aggressive. I think that's what the deal is. But if he can lead that team, they're still super talented. So I like them as a dark horse on the West.
Okay. Hear me out, Jimmer. My most underrated team in the NBA, a team you played for. The San Antonio Spurs. I feel they are ready to blossom in the Western Conference. And I know it's been ugly and it's been hard for Spurs fans because they do have a championship pedigree, but it feels like they are building something very special, led by Victor Wembanyama. I know that he's had trouble staying on the court at times as well, but apparently he's very healthy. He only played 5 games with De'Aaron Fox before the injury last year. Like, think about that combo right there. De'Aaron Fox, Victor Wembanyama. Like, this is a team that could surprise some folks in the Western Conference standings and be a playoff team this year. I think they're massively underrated. They could shock some folks this year.
Yeah, it's a great pick. It is. It's a great pick. Victor is a player like we've never seen before. And they have really good pieces around him. They do. They picked up some really good pieces around him, some veteran guys. It'll be interesting to see how they continue to blossom without Coach Pop in that era. But it's a great pick. So I can't argue with you. I can't argue with you. I like it. I wish I would have picked it, to be honest with you. Sorry.
I like their rookie pick. I think Dylan Harper is going to be an NBA star. Yeah, they added really Kelly Olynyk, who's that veteran presence. Yeah,
I love Kelly. Like
the Spurs, man. Let's go.
They got a chance. They got a chance.
Just make the playoffs. It's better. I think the NBA is better when the Spurs are good.
Sure.
And I feel the same way about the Knicks in the East. When the Knicks were it was exciting to have the Knicks be good and in the playoffs last year.
Loved it. Like, love, absolutely. The Garden is
oh,
a Garden in the playoffs.
Come on.
I don't care if you're at the game, even just watching it on TV. Electric.
Magic. Yes.
Electric. And I'm glad that they're good. And I hope that they have a great season this year.
That was a lengthy but downright awesome edition of the early tray. And again, Jimmer, awesome that you are willing to answer those tough questions. Things that I think your fans are a little afraid to ask you about because it's almost like they feel like they're walking on eggshells. But you're ready, man. You, like you said, you're ready to shoot.
Hey, we're gonna be. I'm an open book. I'm going to be talking about all the stuff. So if you have questions for me, hit me up. I'm telling you, put it on our socials. I'll answer it.
Let's go. And we're going to take our first time out. When we come back, NBA All-Star and 14-year NBA veteran Gordon Hayward gets the full court press. He discusses his recent religious enlightenment, life in NBA retirement, and the real story behind his decision to leave the Utah Jazz for the Boston Celtics. Don't believe everything that's on Twitter, people. From the Logo continues after this.
If you or your business are looking to reach a wide audience, From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette will help you reach your goals. Whether you're interested in title sponsorship, segment sponsorship, or product placement on the podcast, email us at jimmerftl@gmail.com and let us help you shoot your shot.
Welcome back to From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette. It's time for the full court press with our VIP guest, Gordon Hayward. We spoke recently with Gordon about everything from becoming an NBA All-Star to finding new faith. And as promised, we preview the upcoming NBA season with him and ask what's next now that he's retired. Here is Gordon Hayward on From the Logo. He is a 14-year veteran of the National Basketball Association, an NBA All-Star, played for the Utah Jazz, the Boston Celtics, the Charlotte Hornets, and Oklahoma City Thunder. He was drafted 9th overall in the 2010 NBA draft after leading Butler to an NCAA Men's Championship game appearance in 2010. He and his wife, Robin, are the proud parents of 5 beautiful children. And don't forget, he's an elite video game player. He is Gordon Hayward. Gordon, welcome to From the Logo.
Hey, let's go.
Be on.
All right. Now, I've said 5 kids. You just had a baby a few weeks ago. So with a starting 5 of children fully in place, how is life as a father of that many kids?
Yeah, it's been crazy around our house. It's been loud, which is awesome, actually. And so that I was telling Jimmer a little bit before, the new puppy, the new baby phase is worn off from my older kids. They were obsessed with the baby when we first brought him home, and now it seems as if they only want to hold him or do something with him if they can get out of something else. it's a crazy time at the Hayward household.
Man, that's so great. I mean, there's nothing better than having a household that's loud, right? Like with kids, right. And it just feels full. It feels fun. The kids are running around. Obviously, you have all under 10, 5 under 10. So you guys are busy. You're doing great things, but it's awesome. But you retired from the NBA, obviously, in 2024, deciding part of it. You know, you wanted to spend more time with your kids, with your family. So just tell us a little bit. How's that been since you've retired?
Yeah, you know what? It's been awesome. I mean, I try to think of, like, people have asked, like, do you miss it and stuff? And I think that... Yeah. There was one time last year I went to the Butler game in the Big East tournament where they played St. John's. It was in the Garden, which was an unreal atmosphere. And that was the first time where I was like, man, like I kind of missed this. This would have been fun to be a part of. But beyond that, I'm so busy with just life. And I picked up the game of golf. And, you know, by the time you take the kids to school, you know, you got a little bit of time in between school, you pick them up, they have sporting activities, you know, the rest of the night or homework or whatever. And then the day's over and you do it again. So I'm pretty busier now than I was when I was playing, and, I'm trying to, you know, love and enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah.
Jimmer, I think you can relate to that. I feel like I've heard you say that 100 million times that your life is now busier since you have retired.
I don't know how that happens, Gordon, but it does. It gets busier, right? Like people don't realize. I always tell people, as a basketball player, you go in and you have a 2-hour practice. You may have some treatment afterwards. You may do, you know, a little bit of lifting or something like that. Maybe 3 hours total. Then after that, you're done. right? You have nothing else the rest of the day. So it's like, what else do I do? You pick up video games, pick up golf, you do all these other things. And now that you don't have that, you're like, all right, I'm going to fill my time. And then you fill it with way more than just 3 hours worth of stuff. Is that how you felt?
Well, it's like, you can't, there's no excuse. You don't have like a built-in excuse.
To right, exactly. People,
right? So it's like, they totally ask you to do something and I'm not really doing anything else. So it's, when we were playing basketball, it was easy to be like, well, I'm not doing anything, but I have to like prepare for the game or mentally just recover or just rest or whatever. So now I feel obligated to help. And a lot of the stuff too, I want to do too, you know,
right.
Things that I would have wanted to do, but I knew I couldn't really devote the time. And so the day fills up so fast.
Yeah, it does.
Gordon, you mentioned you picked up the game of golf. Just out of mere curiosity, how is your golf game at the current time?
Well, it's all relative, right? But I would say I'm pretty terrible at golf. I shoot in the 90s pretty much. I basically started playing not last summer since it's already October, but the summer before. And I've broken 90 once. I had a big bet with my buddy that I would break 90 within a year of starting golf. And I did accomplish that. But I would say I shoot in the 90s, so I don't think that's very good.
We're there with you, Gordon. We're both not very good at golf, so we understand.
It's very frustrating because, you know, we play basketball our whole life, and you're reacting and dealing with all these moving parts, and it's like all sitting there every single time. It's not moving, you know what I mean?
I should be able to hit this square every time. Should be able to make this putt. I should be able to chip this right where I want it to be. Does not happen. It does not happen. It's a game of precision. And
I'm just wanting it to go in the general vicinity of where
this way, like, not that way.
I like missed shots, and I'm like, I couldn't have done that if I tried 100 times to hit it like that. Like, I couldn't have possibly hit it that bad.
That's so funny.
Gordon Hayward is with us on From the Logo. Looking ahead to what basketball has become and the NBA. And we'll get into some more of your past and your evolution through the NBA as well. But just as you look ahead, what's the most exciting part of how the game is evolving right now?
I think the exciting part is just all the skill, all the size. It just seems like the NBA is getting taller and taller. Everyone's able to do everything. I think Victor Wembanyama is a prime example of that, but it just seems, you know, there's never been an age or a period of time where there's so much free information out there. And I think so many opportunities for people to learn, whether that's on YouTube or Instagram, or there's all these personal trainers in every single city. You know, there was none of that when I grew up. And, you know, I remember watching the Pistol Pete VHS tape, but like, it's so readily available. I think kids are, and I think kids are specializing so early. So everyone's skill is just on another level. And so that's really fun to watch. And obviously the game has moved further and further out too. So there's more and more 3-pointers, which I think we could argue whether or not that's good for the game or not.
Right.
Certainly it makes for more skillful plays and skillful highlights.
Yeah. And for guys like me, we basically have no chance anymore, right? It's 6'2", not super athletic. I mean, still being able to shoot the ball, that does help. I will say help. People love that.
Dimmer, I think no matter where you go, you can always play. My dad used to say, if you can shoot, you can play.
That's
so they
exactly
always
right.
find a spot for you.
That's exactly right. I agree,
you might
I
have
agree,
to move it back
that.
Though. You're
that's the thing. Further and further. I was pretty far back, but I still got to keep going further and further so that Victor Wembanyama's arms can't block my shot. But that's great. You know, I want to ask something quickly about, you know, this past summer that you did that I found was very interesting. We've heard about, you know, some of the faith that you've kind of fallen into, and you were able to go up to Italy and actually meet the Pope, which is incredible. And I just want to hear about that experience.
Yeah. So, man, it was pretty unbelievable, the whole story and how it all took place. I grew up Lutheran, so it's not like I wasn't a Christian or anything like that. And my family was really involved. But my wife's family was Catholic. And so we were married in a Catholic church, and I agreed to, kind of raise my kids Catholic. And then I had so many conversations with a priest or her family and was really intrigued about Catholicism. And it's really not that far off from Lutheran. There's obviously some major differences, but once I just retired, I decided to, I told Robin when we got married, like, I don't want to just become Catholic just to do it because you are. I want to believe it for myself. And so when I retired, I felt like I had the time to kind of dive into that. And Joe Mazzulla, his childhood priest, we got connected obviously through Joe. And then we kind of started doing like Zoom lessons and really just I dove into the Catholic faith. And he kind of won me over. I think the Eucharist is what really won me over. And so then he was like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to get confirmed in Rome? And he was like, I'm going to be there, you know, these dates. And I was kind of like, yeah, that would be awesome. And so yeah. We went over to Rome and I chose the Catholic name Sebastian and got confirmed in the Catholic church where St. Sebastian was buried or is buried. And I think the Vatican found out about that. And this year, the year of 25 is the year of Jubilee. And so they were doing a bunch of events. The Vatican was putting on a bunch of events and they asked me to come over for the Jubilee of Sport. And to talk about kind of how sports is connected with faith and how it brings people hope. And so I was like, yeah, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And they kind of were like, by the way, you'll be able to do Mass with the Holy Father. And at the time, it was Pope Francis. And so we didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, then when he passed, it was kind of like maybe that there won't be a Pope, but the timing of it worked out really well. And so, yeah, so after the event was able to go meet Pope Leo and shake his hand. And he knew that I was from Indiana, which was cool. It was very brief. You know, he kind of like shakes your hand and say a couple words and then, you know, all right. On to the next. But it was an unbelievable experience. I mean, obviously once in a lifetime and so grateful.
Incredible. Gordon Hayward recounting a trip to Rome. So full clarity, I was in Rome for the first time in early June and seeing the Vatican and going through the special door that's only open once every 25 years at St. Peter's Basilica.
That's right.
And the overwhelming amount of faith and hope that I felt from people there, many who had just made like this pilgrimage, like who had saved their life savings to go and walk through this door and see this stuff. It was eye-opening, to say the least, Gordon. So of all the buildings and things that you saw in Rome, whether it's the Sistine Chapel or St. Peter's Basilica, what one impacted you the most?
Man, that's a good question. There's so many, as you know, probably, I'm sure there's so many different amazing buildings within Rome. A lot of the unassuming ones, too, that are just kind of like old and dirty on the outside, and then you walk in and they're beautiful. I always tell people if you've never gone to the Basilica, the St. Peter's Basilica is one of a kind and arguably from a monetary value standpoint, probably the most valuable building in the world, just the amount of stone, the gold, the sheer size of it, the rare marble. I mean, it's incredible. And it like you said, you feel this power there from all the believers. And so I mean, I would recommend to everybody going and seeing the Basilica, but there's all kinds of other ones there too that are really cool. I'll tell you a funny quick story. The first time we were in Rome, we took my two older kids, and they were I think 9 and 8 at the time, so really not that interested, and kind of were complaining that they were bored and stuff, which was a little bit disappointing. But hey, it's kind of the age. And there's these steps, the steps that Jesus took when he went to go see Pontius Pilate, that Constantine's mother brought back to Rome. And we went to go, I was actually convinced by my daughter, Charlie, to go walk the steps because you can go and see the steps and you can actually go up the stairs. And we get there and you can only go up on your knees. And I mean, they're like hard steps. And so I'm like halfway through just dying. And I was fine just going in and looking at him, and Charlie's like, no, we got to go up these steps. And so we start to go up, and I'm just every step. I mean, Jimmer, you can imagine like our knees from basketball. It's just killing me to go up on my knees. And I finally made it up, and we get out. And Charlie, she turns to me and she's like, Dad, I didn't think you were going to make it. So halfway through, I just prayed to Jesus that you're going to make it to the top.
That is great.
Which was cool coming from her. I mean, it was so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great story. It's hilarious. Anything that has to do with knees with basketball players, we are wusses about. I just will say that. Like anything, we're always complaining about our knees. We got knees. We got our ice bags at our knees every time after games, after shoot around, you know, like anything that has to do. So I understand that completely. That's hilarious. I love that story. I need to visit Rome. I haven't been to Rome. That's one of the places in the world that I have not been yet. So I'm putting it on my list. We're going to get to Rome. I need to see all of the sights and everything. So you just convinced me on that. But
yeah. Whenever you go, you got to let me know. I got some good spots.
Okay.
To go eat. I got all the spots for you.
That's what I want, really. I want the food. So I'm in. Okay, sounds good. Let's do it. So now I want to, you know, obviously I want to shift a little bit to basketball. I want to talk about what it was like to play high school basketball in Indiana, right? Like that's just, it's like Texas football, right? High school basketball in Indiana. Let me hear a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I think you said it right. I think when I grew up, especially when I grew up, it was still single A basketball or single class basketball. I think they changed that in 1998. So pretty early on, I was 8 years old at the time, but I remember vividly going to everybody in the town, going to the high school games on Friday night and, you know, just packing it and watching the high school players and really just like worshiping those guys, just thinking that they're the coolest guys, just the high school players. Because I think that's just what everybody did. I mean, everyone had a hoop. There's not much else to do in Indiana. And so I think from a young age, you just are like inspired to play and to kind of be like those high school players. And yeah, I mean, I think people from Indiana, we just like to brag that we know how to play the right way. I think that's a staple of how guys from Indiana play. And I think it's just kind of a credit to the culture and just I think everyone grows up playing. So they kind of just they learn from everybody else. You learn from I learned everything I knew from my dad, who wasn't even, you know, a great basketball player, but just loved basketball at the rec and, you know, whatever. So I think it's just, it was special because it's like, that's just what everybody did.
You may have already just answered the question, Gordon, but who was the biggest influence in your basketball life? Maybe it was your dad. And if so, why was he or someone else that figure?
Yeah. I mean, my dad's really the only answer there. I think he was because he taught me everything I knew. I mean, we would be in the backyard just shooting all the time. He put me through the Steve Alford basketball workout. You know, he would take me on Sunday mornings and play with his group of friends that he would play with every Sunday. And I thank him for kind of just giving me that passion and helping me and teaching me so much.
That Steve Alford, man, he was the coach at New Mexico. We played there many times, and he is a competitive dude, and he was a great player. Obviously, Indiana went to Indiana, awesome.
That's right.
That's so funny. What was your recruiting process like? Right, I think you were pretty heavily recruited, but also, you know, if you weren't going to go to Butler, where would you have gone?
So you would be wrong there. I was not heavily recruited. I actually received Butler and IUPUI, and then Purdue came in super late. They told me to be a preferred walk-on, and then they kind of just Coach Painter was like, we found a scholarship. Like, would you want to come? And it just didn't feel right. But those were the only three schools that I even got offered. I didn't take an official visit to anywhere. I think maybe Butler was technically an official visit, but it's 20 minutes from my house. So I just was a late bloomer. If I wasn't going to go to Butler, I mean, I was brainwashed to go to Purdue my whole life. My parents both went to Purdue. But I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know where I would have gone. I probably would have just gone to Purdue and been like a normal student or something like that if I didn't go to Butler.
Crazy.
All right, you end up at Butler. So like Jimmer, you were recruited by Siena College and BYU. So you two kind of share that in common. You pick the programs. And everything changes for the better, seemingly, for both of you. Gordon, obviously, you went on your run in 2010. Jimmer, you went on your run in 2011. So, Gordon, when you were with Butler during that magical run to the NCAA Final Four and championship game in 2010, what was the best part about making your way through the bracket and experiencing March Madness at its pinnacle?
The best part? I mean, I guess just continuing to win. I think you're just taking it game by game. And I actually, before the season, we took a trip to Italy, actually, and that was our overseas trip. And I can remember we were talking amongst ourselves. We had most people back from my freshman year, and I told the guys, like, this is our year. I was like, 20 and 10 are my favorite numbers. The Final Four is in Indianapolis. Like, it's just destiny. And everyone kind of looked at me crazy. But we went on like a 20, I think 25 game win streak or something to end the year. Went undefeated in the Horizon League, which I know it doesn't sound like much, but anybody that's played mid-major basketball, like, going undefeated in conference is a huge deal because everybody just knows everything about you. You get everyone's best shot. So we were rolling, and we kind of felt we should win just about every game. Everyone thinks it was such a Cinderella season, which we were like, I think we were preseason ranked 10th and then ended the season 10th in the nation. So it really wasn't like a crazy, crazy underdog story. I think the budgets were like, obviously Butler's budget was way smaller than other schools, but yeah, I mean, I think also being able to go home and play in the Final Four was in Indianapolis was really cool as well.
That had to have been super special. And it's one of the best extended mid-major programs run of all time, right? Because it wasn't just that year. You guys did that for several years in a row, right?
Well,
Shelton Mack and the guys afterwards. And like, you guys were good for a long time.
well, they so they the thing that I think was even more impressive is that we go to the national title game and then I leave, and then the very next year they actually didn't play that well. They actually, I think they had to, they lost the Horizon League regular conference and had to win the tournament to get in, and then go on another magical run and make it to the championship game again and lost. That was to Kemba and that Big East tournament run. But that to me was what was really crazy, that they went all the way back after losing, a first round NBA player or whatever. I mean, that was what something that I think was really special.
Yeah, it was great. And I remember that was the year that it was my season, and we actually played against Florida in the Sweet 16 before them. And if we had won that game, we would have matched up against Butler in the Elite Eight, which would have been a really fun
Cool.
matchup of mid-majors. And I was hoping that was going to be the case.
That would have been really interesting to see Brad try to take you out
Yes.
of the conversation. Brad was so good at doing that, but
Yeah.
obviously you were unstoppable that year. And it would have been really fun to watch for
It
sure.
w it would have been. They would put Shelvin on me for sure, and then I would just told my guys to keep setting screens higher, like higher and higher, so I can come off and just I'm just pulling no matter what. He wouldn't have stopped me from shooting, that's for sure. That's I may not have made a lot of shots, but definitely wouldn't have stopped me shooting. But so just thinking, talking about national championship game, can you take me through that last free throw sequence that you had against Duke? And did you think that shot was going in? How
Oh
often?
man.
Yeah, here
I'm
we
so
go.
sorry
Yeah,
to bring
bring
it
it
up.
up, right?
I'm sorry to bring it up.
So I don't know. I think it was the whole thing was really just like instinct, to be honest.
It wasn't planned that. It wasn't planned
No.
like this is what
So,
we're going to do if the free
well,
throw is made or missed, you know?
I don't remember what we were supposed to do if it was made. But Brad's whole thing, like, I got a lot of cheap rebounds that year because what he did was he put the two guys on the bottom. They just basically face blocked out. And then I was right next to the free throw shooter. And so I just would come in and clean up. And so I think he back rimmed it. So it was just like, once that happened, it was all just, there's 2 seconds left and you got to go, got to get a shot off. Matt set a ridiculous screen to even get me open. And then from my vantage point, it looked way off because I wasn't trying to bank it. And I was kind of at like an angle. And so I didn't think it was close. It ended up being closer, than it was, but or than I thought it was. But the shot that gets me is I had a baseline fadeaway, like a step back baseline fadeaway, which was like one of my go-to shots the series before when we were only one. And that shot back rimmed on me. And so, I mean, as you know, as a shooter, when the shots back rim, like, they feel so good. It's just really long. And so that's the one that I always think about.
Gordon Hayward is on From the Logo. Let's fast forward that year to NBA draft night when you are selected 9th overall by the Utah Jazz. How much did you know about the Jazz and their interest in you before they actually selected you at number 9?
Well, so I the Jazz was that was my hardest workout I did. I think I did like 14 workouts, And but I played well in that workout. And so Mark Bartolacci, my agent, told me, he's like, dude, you could go 4 or you could go 28. Like, we just don't know. And so I just remember sitting there in New York, and then I think right before it was the Jazz's pick, Mark was like, I think they're gonna take you here. And you know, obviously they take me at number 9. And you know, I think it was just ecstatic to be drafted anywhere. I didn't really have like a place I per se wanted to go. I know Indiana was super interested in me, and they were at number 10. And that probably would not have been a good thing for me to go there, just because there would have been maybe too many distractions. You're at home. And but I think it was Salt Lake was a great place for me to be. It was very similar to Indy. You know, like, so meaning like not a big adjustment for somebody that really had never left home. And you know, it kind of helped me grow up there, you know. So
What were your thoughts of Utah in general? Before you got there, did you know anything about it?
not really. I kind of thought, so we grew up going to Colorado, and so I kind of thought like skiing for on spring break and stuff. So I kind of thought it was similar to that. I thought it was going to be super cold. It actually was pretty mild winter, relatively. But didn't really have any. I mean, I grew up like obviously seeing them in the finals, you know, and watching with John Stockton. My dad told me I needed to model my game after John Stockton, because I wasn't supposed to be very tall. But didn't know too much about them. Didn't know anything about Mormons at all. And so just was. I mean, I was 20 years old and just excited, honestly, to be in the NBA, and was just ready to do anything that they wanted me to do. Just so happy to even be in the NBA.
The NBA is understatedly a cutthroat business, and Jazz fans, understandably, were very sad when you left Utah and decided to go play for the Boston Celtics. And you're trying to handle this still as a relatively young person. So, what was the most difficult part about that whole transition and your eventual trade to the Celtics and then your run through Boston?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hardest part is just not knowing what's going to be the best decision. I mean, nobody has a crystal ball. And like I had said, I'd grown up in Utah. At this point in time, I was, I think, what year was that? I mean, I would have been 26 or 27 years old or something, and had 2 kids, and, you know, had spent the last 7 years of my life there in Utah, and had built a bunch of great relationships. And you know, and so just I didn't know what I should do or what was the best move. And I felt like reuniting with Brad and playing in the East and playing with the Boston Celtics team, who at the time when I decided to go there had Al and IT, I felt like that would have been a really good place for me to go. And so Brad was a huge part of that decision. I mean, I think the toughest part of the aftermath was just like, I think, like the lies that were told about the whole thing, and people just, you know, completely turning on you.
Oh,
And
man.
as you can imagine, well, I mean, as Jimmer, as you know, it's like everyone's, you know, it's like they get mad at the players for choosing to leave, but then, you know, organizations will they'll sign you as a free agent and then trade you in the same year, which is crazy. So it's like there's no loyalty there, and so it's a business, and so you learn to understand that. But it was a little disappointing just to see some of the people just turn on you, for what, you know, for feeling like I'm making a decision that's best for me and my family. And but it is what it is, you know. So I still have good relationships with people in Utah, and I still think it's a great place to raise a family.
Gordon, in terms of things that were misconstrued, what do you wish people knew about the real story of how that all went down?
Yeah, I mean, I think I it's hard to be honest, Spencer, to remember everything. I feel as if there were reports out that like we were purposely taking a long time to like screw the Jazz. And I think so what happened was I like paid for a private jet to go from Miami to Boston, then back. I was living in San Diego at the time. And so we did it as quick as possible, did one day in each city to try to figure it out. And so like that wasn't true. And then people, I think there were thoughts that I had sold my house already in Utah before even deciding, which was also not true. But I mean, you guys know how it is. Like there's things things just spread like wildfire. And but that was where it was like, I'm like, me and my wife are like reading stuff, and it's like, man, like, this isn't even true at all. Like, this is just not even close to the truth. So
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, I've been there, and you know, the biggest thing is that you need to do as a professional athlete, you need to do what's best for yourself and for your family, right? That obviously comes first. And that's the way you were thinking about that process, right? Brad Stevens is in the Boston. They had a really good season. Adding you as a wing player to that core that they had was going to be very effective. Like, all the things added up, right? So from our perspective, obviously we understand exactly what we were thinking, and then you know, loyalty and fandom comes into play, and that's just how it goes. And you know, I've obviously been there many times, but I think it was a great fit for you. I thought when they got you, I was like, man, these guys are going to be really, really good. And then obviously 2017, that first game of the season, you just had a fractured and dislocated your left leg. What was going through your mind at that point as soon as that happened? Because I was watching that game live and remember seeing that. It was so early in the game, and I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. Just devastated, because it was such a perfect fit, and I was excited to watch that team that year.
I mean, it was devastating. I think that's a good word for it. I mean, I think just initially, just not knowing, like, if you're gonna walk again, let alone like run again,
Seriously,
like,
yeah.
with how my foot was completely turned the other direction. And
Yeah.
it's probably changed the arc of my career and the path of my career. And so certainly disappointing. And you're right, that year, it was actually, I think, maybe the following year, like, on paper, our team was unbelievable. Like,
So good.
for an NBA 2K roster,
Yeah.
we were incredible, and nobody knew how good JB and JT would become. But it was just one of those situations that it was just unfortunate, and disappointing, surely. But it's sports, and I think if you play this game long enough, something, maybe to not to that extreme, but injuries happen, and most people go through at least one injury throughout their career. And so,
Yeah.
it kind of sucked. That was my big injury. And then I think it, like I said, it kind of, for the rest of my career, I was having other little injuries, I think, were probably because of that big injury. But it's kind of how it worked. Up until then, I was blessed to not really have any injuries. And
Yeah.
so I was certainly due.
I've been there before. I didn't have really any big injuries either, and then second game into the Olympics, you
That's
know,
right.
tear my adductor completely and don't get to play in the Olympics. So you never know what, you know, God's plan is for you and that timing and what it is, but you just have to continue to push through and have that faith and understand that it happens for a reason, and be able to keep pushing forward. And you've done a great job of that. So no, it's awesome to see.
That's right. That's right. And I think, like I always, you just said it, but if I don't have that happen, I probably am in Boston the rest of my career, and then I never come to Charlotte, where we've made unbelievable relationships. We found our forever home. We're entrenched in the community, and
Yeah.
so it's almost like I was supposed to be here.
Yeah, Gordon, I'm always impressed when I watch athletes sustain a significant injury like that and then fight back and play again and still play at a high level, because I think a lot of people would understand if you just said, "You know what? I'm out." Like, that was too difficult, but you didn't do that. So what was the key to fighting back and finding your way back into the NBA and again to become an impactful player for Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, I think just certainly grateful and thankful for the PT staffs and the strength and recovery staffs that I had in Boston, and other people that helped me out, really kind of dropped everything to come help me out. Without them, I certainly wouldn't be back. And then, I think having a family and support system, luckily for me, I was married, and so I had Robin and the girls at the time. I mean, they were just happy that I was home, which was amazing to get my mind off of the injury and off of basketball. And so they were instrumental as well. And then I think just, that personal desire to kind of show the world that I can get back to the player that I was, and kind of get back to where I can feel like I was just as good as I was before, that really motivated me as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love to hear that. And you just mentioned Robin, right? We got to give Robin some love here. It's amazing. It's so important to have a great you know, partner by your side. Like, how has that helped you throughout your process? Because for me, Whitney's been my rock this whole time throughout it. They're traveling, they're with the kids by themselves, they're just manning the fort and doing everything that they need to. How has that been affected your life?
Yeah, she's the best. And I always tell people she's it's cliche now, but Kevin Durant's right. I mean, she's the real MVP here. Without her, there's no way I could have done what I did and been able to have a family and, you know, enjoy some of the success that I had. And so certainly when I got injured, I mean, she just picked up everything for me. And, you know, now instead of only having two kids, she basically has three kids because she was taking care of me as well. I think the mental side of it too, right? Like having somebody that's your friend that can just like talk to you about different things and you can vent to her and, you know, just get it all out. That's extremely important as well. Just the mental side of recovery, but also just in general, like when you're not hurt, you know, like you go to a game and things don't go your way or whatever. And you got to sometimes just vent some frustration out. And so she's always been there for me for that. And, you know, I love her for that.
Yeah, Whitney's been through a lot of vent sessions, that's for sure. So I understand that completely.
All right, Gordon, one more, I guess, bigger question before we get into a quick NBA season preview with you. Sure. But I'm always fascinated by the moments that change people's lives and the hard lessons they learn. And you may have already alluded to it in some fashion, but if not the injury, what was the hardest lesson you ever learned as a professional basketball player?
Wow. Well, I think I learned a big lesson. Probably, let's see, what year was that? That would have been, it was the year that Quinn Snyder became the head coach over the Jazz. So maybe 2015, something like that. I was selected to play for the World Cup team and Team USA. Well, it was like I was in the mix of people that had a chance to play. And I remember we went to New York and Chicago, and like I didn't really play. And so I was just kind of sitting at the end of the bench. And at that moment, it was a huge lesson learned to like, because like when I play with the Jazz and basically for every other team except for my rookie year, like, you know, you're the guy, you're the one getting all the shots. You're the one that everyone else is game planning around. And so it's like, you kind of forget that there are people at the end of the bench or there are people that are on the court that don't have the ball. That's like, this is what it feels like. And it kind of like brought me back to think like how I need to be grateful here. I need to remember those guys and include those guys. And cause they're just as valuable to the team as the guys that are playing and the guys that have the ball. And so it kind of like humbled me a little bit and taught me a good lesson.
That's awesome to hear. Yeah. You would have been a good teammate to me, man. I was sitting on those benches for a while. Sometimes that's how it works. Totally get it, man. That's great to hear.
Well, I think it's one of those things like when you first get in the league, what would you say, Jimmer? Like 99% of players go through a year or two or three.
100%.
They don't even play.
That's the
hardest part of getting to the NBA is like realizing I got to wait my turn almost, or I got to be a professional and still work out or whatever. And
totally. Absolutely. Understood. Totally understand. All right. So let's get into this NBA season preview real quick, just to finish off. We got a couple of rapid fire questions here, and I'll start off with the first one. Who's your early favorite to win the NBA finals this year?
Probably the Thunder again. I mean, I think they got just about everything that you would want in a team. They got a go-to guy. They've got other guys that can step up. Their defense is incredible. So, I mean, I think they got to be the clear favorite.
Okay, Gordon, question number two. Who's your favorite player to watch in the league right now?
Favorite player to watch in the league right now? That's a good question. I like watching Austin Reeves, to be honest with you. I like watching players that are, and this is no knock on him, but players that are, or you, Jimmer, because you said this about yourself, players that are not as athletic or quick as other guys, but still find a way to like get buckets and impact the game. I think that is, I really admire and respect those guys. because I just think it just makes it so much harder when you're not like the fastest or the longest or can jump the. So I like watching Austin Reeves. His footwork is really good. He's gotten really good at drawing fouls, which is a skill. So I like watching him.
Yeah, you have to pay attention to details, right? You pay attention to details. You're really playing real basketball, and it's fun to watch that. I always tell guys to watch guys like that. So, all right, last one right here. Most underrated team in the league right now, in your opinion?
Most underrated team.
It's a tough one. There's a lot of good teams right
There
now
are a lot of good
popping
teams,
up.
and it's hard to say like who's the most underrated. I would say
Yeah.
like the Magic maybe, although I don't think they're
Oh, I like that one.
underrated, but
Yeah.
I think it's like it's like their turn. Like they need to start showing
Yeah.
something here. Franz and Paolo are like what, in their fourth or fifth or
Yeah.
sixth year of the league or whatever, and they just picked up Desmond Bane. So they finally have like a lethal shooter. Like they got to start doing it here, or else it's like what are we waiting on? Those guys are on the wing position. I don't know very many better duos than those two. They're both big, can handle.
Yeah.
Shooting is their biggest question mark, but that's what I would say.
Yep.
I'd say the Magic maybe. It's a
Okay,
great
and then
pick.
final question, one that's unrelated to basketball, because again, I intro'd you as an elite video game player, and you are that. Like, you've had your run with that, Gordon. What's the go-to
I have.
video game of choice for you and the Hayward family right now?
Oh man. It's harder and harder for me to play video games these days. I would say I'm trying to get everybody to play Mario Kart. I like to think I'm pretty good at Mario Kart. We used to play Mario Kart on the plane in the NBA, and I would try to get everyone in Mario Kart. So
It's Let's
it's the
go.
it's probably the best game out there. So I'm right there with you. Like, everyone can play. It's easy.
It
It's
is.
fun. Like, it great. Top-notch game. Love it. With
Top
you.
tier for sure. S tier. S
That's
tier.
right.
Gordon, we appreciate the time you spent with us on From the Logo, your perspective on faith, on family, and certainly your expertise in basketball and just the lessons we can learn from you. So thanks for hanging out with us, and we hope to do it again.
Yeah, thanks guys. Anytime.
Those conversations never disappoint, and I love how open he was about his faith and, in his own way, the pilgrimage he took to Rome to meet the Pope. Jimmer, we got to get you to Rome, dude.
I can't believe I haven't been to Rome. It's one of the places I haven't been, and I've heard it's incredible. So I need to get out there. I need to see the architecture. I need to eat the food. I do hear it gets hot in the summertime, so maybe a fall, springtime, trip to Rome. But I definitely need to get out there.
I bring up Rome because when we return, you reveal the top five places you've ever visited in a unique open gym. Let's go. Are you ready for that?
Man, I've been all over. Where's Jimmer? Not where's Waldo, where's Jimmer been? And I'm excited to talk about it, because I think number one will surprise some people.
Ooh, that's what we call a tease, folks. From the Logo continues right after this with Jimmer's top five places he's visited.
If you or your business are looking to reach a wide audience, From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette will help you reach your goals. Whether you're interested in title sponsorship, segment sponsorship, or product placement on the podcast, email us at jimmerftl@gmail.com and let us help you shoot your shot.
From the Logo, rolling on, and you've waited long enough for this week's top five. It is the top five places Jimmer Fredette has ever visited. You are a world traveler and then some. My goodness, you've been to a lot of places. We chronicled not to Rome yet. We'll change that quickly. But of the places you have visited, Jimmer, count us down from 5 to 1. Your top places to see in this beautiful planet we live on.
Yeah, this is a tough list. Been all over the place. Been fun to see so many different places, cultures, but I've narrowed it down to five. I do have an honorable mention that I will mention afterwards, because there are so many good places. I have to at least do that. Number five, we're going United States, okay? But we're going to Kauai. The North Shore in Kauai. I'm not sure if it gets any more beautiful. It is the Nepali coast. It gets the most rainfall out of any place in the world on a yearly basis, which is an unbelievable stat. That the Princeville area, and just where we go to Hanalei Bay, and you see
the beauty there, and also my family vacations there, so it has sentimental value to me as well. It's an amazing place. So it has to be on the list, number five for me.
Yes. Jurassic Park was filmed there, for crying out loud, at least portions of the movie.
Jurassic Park, Pirates of the Caribbean had places there. Tropic Thunder had some places there. I mean, classics, classic movies, right? So, all right, number four, we're going into Spain, Madrid. I had a great experience in Madrid. It's one of those places that has some energy, kind of like the energy, a little bit of energy like New York City. The food is awesome. A lot of history. It was just a really fun time in Madrid. I just had a great experience. I love the city. So that's my number four of places I've been. Number three is Singapore.
Ooh.
Singapore is extremely clean. Extremely clean. It's its own little spot. The airport, if you've ever been to Singapore airport, it is probably the best airport in the world. It is very cool. It's got like a waterfall that flows through it. And you walk into Singapore, it's just like paradise. They have awesome food. It's a very international place. It's kind of a hub for, you know, finances. So it is a very international. You can get anything you want there. A lot of foreigners, a lot of locals. They have like this beautiful pond with a ton of architecture around it that's man-made. Just an awesome spot. So that's my number three. Number two is Amsterdam. For some reason, I like cities that where in the fall time it gets a little cold, and the leaves change. And I was there during the fall time, and I'm sure that's part of it. But the river that runs through the city, the food was great. There's just a lot to do in Amsterdam. Very international city as well. A lot of diversity, so you can kind of get a little bit of everything. So I just had a great time in Amsterdam.
Did you ride a bike there?
Of course. I mean, you almost get hit by bikes as you're walking. Like, if you're not careful, you get hit by a bike. That's absolutely true. So, yes, we got on a bike. We also get on those little scooters, the Lime scooters. If you ever had those, we got the app.
Oh, yeah.
In Europe, it's the best way to get around. We throw it on. We got the app. And literally, our team would, 3x3 team would drive to these tournaments on our Lime scooters with our backpacks. It was amazing. Amsterdam's number two. Number one on the
list. Here we go.
It's New York City. I don't care what anyone says. I love New York City. Best food out there. The energy is like no other. You could do anything. It's beautiful. Central Park. You can see some of these sights. You can go to a Broadway show. You get a slice of pizza. Then you can go and just go to go down to Levain Bakery and get one of the best cookies in the world. I mean, it is my favorite city. I've been a lot of places. I can't beat the energy of New York City. Every time I'm there, I'm fired up. I just absolutely love being there. And it's my number one place that I've ever visited. And I don't care. I'm sorry. A lot of people probably don't like that, but it's my number one place.
So typical New York guy.
I'm not apologizing for it either. I'm just not.
I mean, I kid. Typical, but I kid. You don't get no complaint from me. New York City is, until you've been there, it's hard to explain the energy that truly resides and exists in that city. And like you said, it's just so diverse within this. I mean, it's crazy that Central Park exists where it does. Because when I think New York, I just think skyscrapers and Times Square, but Central Park is like this haven amidst the chaos.
Sure.
It's very unique. And food in New York City, like, you can get anything and everything you want, and it's all at the highest level.
It's at the highest level. Exactly. So it's my number one. You know, I'm just going to throw a little honorable mentions out there. Lausanne, Switzerland, incredible. Valencia, Spain. Athens, Greece is great. Alaska is
beautiful.
About as beautiful as it gets. London, love London. And then one that's a little bit out there is St. Petersburg, Russia. Beautiful city. Beautiful city. So those are some honorable mentions, but there we go. There's my list for today.
I love it. All right. If you would like to submit questions to Jimmer or our guests or to me, it's pretty simple. Follow us on our social media accounts @JimmerFTL, whether that's X, Instagram, obviously YouTube, TikTok. That's how you follow, and you can interact with us through those social media platforms. Ask away. Like Jimmer said, if you ask it, we will answer it.
Let's go. Make sure you do it.
Pretty simple.
Use the hashtag OpenGymFPL as well. Post on our socials. We want to hear from you guys.
Okay, as we wrap up, the 3x3 update is delivering today. Why does the coin toss matter so much? And is there overtime? Answers next when From the Logo continues.
If you or your business are looking to reach a wide audience, From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette will help you reach your goals. Whether you're interested in title sponsorship, segment sponsorship, or product placement on the podcast, email us at jimmerftl@gmail.com and let us help you shoot your shot.
Fourth quarter time on this edition of From the Logo. Yeah, hold it up. Let them know. It is our USA Basketball 3x3 update. GM Jimmer is back with the latest and greatest on the drive to gold for Team USA in 2028. Recapping his teams across the globe, plus your weekly rule and insight into the game to get more acclimated with one of the newest and fastest and frankly popular Olympic sports. Okay, Jimmer, what would you like to discuss in the world of 3x3 basketball today?
All right. Well, first, our guys in Miami, they were out in Taiwan just recently, and they were in a challenger event, and they took third place, which means that they were able to qualify for the Masters, right? Remember, last time we talked about the top three getting out there, and they made it in the top three, right? Obviously, they didn't win. They won their last tournament. This one, they came top three. They're doing great, but they made it to the qualified for the Masters. Want to give it up for my guys in Miami, obviously. So now what we're going to talk about, coin toss, overtime rule, right? So literally in every game, before you play, they have the ref come out and you actually do a coin toss for who gets to get the ball first. Okay. So they do the coin toss, put it on, and then whoever wins the toss gets to choose if they keep the ball or if they defer it and give it to the other team. So there's a debate here, okay, because the whole point is if you take the ball first and you play and the game goes to overtime for some reason, because there is overtime, that in overtime, the team that did not get the ball first gets the ball in overtime first.
Oh.
And the overtime rule is the first to score 2 points wins. It's no time. It's literally the first to score 2 points, right? So to have the ball first in overtime is a big advantage, because if you hit a two, the game's over. Or if you get a one and then you stop them from hitting a two, you know, you have a big advantage. So there was always a debate between me and my teammates of, do we take the ball or do we defer it? One of the guys on our team, Kareem, he was adamant that we deferred, right? Because he's like, he wants to make sure that in overtime, if we got the game, if we had overtime, that we had the ball. And I honestly was like, no, I want the ball first. Give me the, I do not want to start on defense. I want to start scoring and putting it to them right away, hitting the two, doing whatever, and then getting a stop and then doing it again. I'm like, I want to make sure that we have that advantage first, right? So that's the debate. I can see both sides of the argument. But for me, I always wanted to take the ball, because do you know how many overtime games that I played when I was in 3x3?
Zero?
Zero.
Wow.
Played zero overtime games. Now, that's not always the case. That's definitely abnormal. There are definitely times where you will be in overtime as a 3x3 basketball player. I'm not sure how we did not get there, but most teams have it at least a few times a year. And if it's a big game and you have it first, you know, sometimes. But I like the mindset of taking the ball, scoring, and then getting after him. What do you think, Spence?
Color me shocked that you would want the ball first to shoot, Jimmer. I am absolutely stunned.
Yeah, 100%. Why wouldn't you be, right?
No, I'm with you there. Like, the game moves so fast,
yeah,
and it's all about momentum. Like, if you start fast and you build like a 3 or 4 point lead early in the game,
yeah,
I want to look at the analytics, but I tend to believe like your chances of winning the game, if you can build an early lead, go up exponentially.
Yeah,
because it moves so fast.
It does. And that's the case against it. Our case for, you know, taking the ball, and then obviously if you don't start fast and it's close and then you get to overtime, you're like, dang, I didn't take the ball. I could see both sides, but we almost deferred every single time just because of that's, you know, Kareem was super out about it, and we were on board with it. We knew, like, hey, let's just try to get a stop first. I was like, just let me sit out first, then, you know, you guys play defense, and then I'll come in at the break, and then I'll come back in later. I'm totally fine with that. I don't care.
I'm gonna sit out for the first few points, guys. When you guys are done playing defense,
yeah, I'll be in. I'll get in for you.
Fresh legs. I'm gonna come in, knock down a two. It's all good.
Exactly. that's the debate. I want to hear from everyone. What do you think? Would you take the ball, or would you defer? Let's hear it.
Great stuff. How do you get to overtime? Clock runs out.
Yeah.
And
so
clock
runs out and you're tied, right? So it could be 18-18, could be 19-19. If you get to 21, obviously you win. So
game's over.
It has to be below that. So it's, you know, it has to be anything below that, and the time runs out. And then at that point, you go to overtime.
Yeah. I know that seems like a dumb question. Like, how do you think they get to overtime, you idiot? But because, like, a lot of people don't realize that it's not just the first of 21. Like, there is a clock involved in the game.
Exactly. And if it runs out before he gets to 21, whoever's up wins. So
there you go. Oh, great stuff, man. Another fantastic edition of From the Logo. Jimmer, this is your chance. As I set the stage, I put the ball in your hands. It's your final shot and your final thought.
Yeah. Thanks again to Gordon. Just an awesome pod today. He was really, really, really special. And we appreciate his time. We appreciate all the fans. We really want to hear from you. So please post on our socials, comment on our YouTube page. We want to interact with you guys. We want to have, you know, some fun conversations. Make sure that you're asking us anything and answering our questions. But thanks again for listening and subscribing. Spence, keep up the good work, man. You're crushing it.
My man, great to do this with you. Appreciate you. 8 episodes deep. Looking forward to great times ahead. And a reminder to all of you, shoot your shot in life. We'll see you next time.